Now, back in 2011, the International Association of Athletics Federation and the International Olympic Committee introduced some controversial policies around female athletes with hyperandrogenism, a condition where women naturally produce quite high levels of testosterone. Now, under fears that athletes with hyperandrogenism, were too masculine to compete against other women, the policy required they undergo hormonal or even surgical intervention to bring down their testosterone to levels deemed, fair by other athletes in the other wider community. But how fair is that to athletes on the receiving end of the policy? Daryl Adair is an associate professor in sports management at UTS, joins the breakfast once more. Daryl, a very good morning.
Good morning.
Now, is there any scientific evidence suggesting that female athletes with, high levels of testosterone are advantaged in any real way?
Well, this is a question that the Court of Arbitration for Sport wrestled with 2 years ago. And what they determined was that the average difference, if you like, between elite male and elite female athletes was around 12% of performance. And so what they said to the IAAF and the IOC is, come back to us with scientific evidence that testosterone specifically could account for that difference. Now, what's happened is that they've come back and they've run out of time, so they've been given another 2 months. But essentially, one study, for example, they've come back, indicated, depending on the event, between, say, 1.5% to 4%. So, in other words, what they've come back with is nothing to indicate that testosterone gives male-like advantages in terms of performance. And thus, testosterone is one of a range of attributes that you could associate with somebody competing in sport, whether that be, height or strength or, a particular kind of body shape.
So why the fear-mongering around that in this case?
Well, I think in part because one of the most impressive recent athletes of recent time, Caster Semenya, from South Africa, came on the scene in 2008 and was quite unknown at the time. She was only 18, and she beat a world-class field. At the time, her time was only in the sort of the top 20 that had ever been achieved by women, but her physical appearance was different, shall we say, to the stereotype we assume of very lithe kind of women in track and field. She was much more muscular, but the problem that the IAAF had was that her fellow competitors and many in the media were suggesting that she wasn't a woman. And so what transpired subsequently was some rather regrettable commentary. And she was required, after some evaluations by the IAAF, to reduce her natural testosterone level. Now, there's no suggestion that Caster's not a woman, but my understanding is she has a condition called adrenal hyperplasia. So her adrenaline glands produce more testosterone than is the case normally. But that is something she was born with. So she's been required, or certainly after the original 2011 policy, to take hormone treatment to change the way her body works. And after that was challenged in the Court of Arbitration for Sport, she was then allowed to compete without that imposition. And, she's done well. I mean, she ran a third the other day at the World Championships, but Caster's very much a woman. She's just that she's a woman with different attributes, much the same as, I suppose, Michael Phelps as a swimmer is very different to many swimmers in that his arm length is extraordinary. The stretch of his arms is longer, if you put them out and measure them, than the height between his feet and his head. And he actually has a medical condition, which I've forgotten the name of, which helps to explain his physiology.
But no one's suggesting he go through arm shortening procedures.
That's exactly right.
So these policies, despite the fact we've now seen evidence suggesting that testosterone levels may not have a huge impact, have actually had an impact on the athletes. They've been forced to do, undergo procedures because of these policies.
Well, that's right. Some women even felt pressured into undergoing surgery to change their bodies. Having to actually go through surgical intervention to compete in sport is incredibly invasive. The other thing we don't fully understand too is if there are women who have also been required to take medications to alter their hormone profiles, what this impact is in terms of their health, because we're actually manipulating what are already healthy bodies under the assumption that if we get them below a level, and the level is quite arbitrary, that was set by the IOC of 10 nanomoles per litre. The thing is that the endocrinologists working in this area have established that there's considerable variability of testosterone level among athletes. And so some men actually have quite low levels of testosterone, even into the female range, and some females into the male range or close thereof. But it's only the females that are actually under the spotlight, because the assumption is there's too much testosterone in a woman, then she becomes manlike.
That's absolutely shocking. Darryl, just finally, you mentioned that some research is ongoing. There's another couple of months to produce results. Do you think we'll see some changes around this policy soon?
Look, I'll be surprised. Unless there's some papers that are in press that are going to indicate that testosterone is this jet fuel, and that, you know, women with hyperandrogenism will effectively be able to compete with the men, I don't really think that the policy is going to change.
All right, Darryl, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Darryl Adair there. He's an associate professor in sports management over at UTS.